All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Onsite Inside podcast. I'm your host, Corey Tompkins, and today we have someone that is very familiar to a lot of the listeners that have stuck around from day one. So today we have Sam Barlow from Barlow Building. It is episode 28. Sam, thank you for coming on. This is not your first time. And as I said to you off camera before, this is the first second round that we've had of someone. So thank you again, man, for coming on.
I was wondering on the way up here whether I was the first, second guy.
You're the first, second.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got a few other guys that are filtering back through.
Yeah.
So, but nah, man, as always, you know, I do appreciate it. And it is definitely a hike for you. You're down at Corumba now, you mentioned. So it's a little bit further than it was before.
Yeah, and, it's not too bad. It's all
right. Yeah, so you got to escape the Gold Coast and come up to filthy Brisbane for the day.
But I was actually having to listen to a couple of the reels from the first time.
Yeah.
I come on and it's so funny. Like it's not that long ago, but then how fast things move. It's like...
Well, that's what I mean. So like me and, you know, and we'll start diving into some of the questions, but me and Nick were like thinking about like, that's why we reached out and we were like, oh, well, should we or not? And it is, man, like currently now, like... Both of us, me and you, like business is moving with such speed now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like 6 months, it goes like that.
Yeah.
But a business can change its whole identity in 6 months. That's why I was like, yeah, fuck it. Like let's, you know.
Last time we spoke, it was, I remember one of the conversations you and I had was about you just, I think we spoke early last year and the Christmas prior, so a few months prior to that, you were saying how, oh, you know, you had to remove yourself from work.
Mm.
And, you know, allow people to step into roles and you kind of, you know, give them that space to be able to grow into it. And it's funny that,
like it's been like from then till now, it's polar opposite.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like for us anyway, it's been a fucking crazy journey, you know.
Yeah.
We were just talking about like the comfortability of even talking on camera, the journey of the podcast. Like we were, you know, for you listeners anyway, that are listening, like that's just some of the stuff that we were talking off camera just before. But, it's been good. So it'd be good to talk a little bit more in depth now. The ice has been broken. This is not our first date. This is now our second date. So man. So I just want to talk about, I'll dive straight in. So do you want to just tell some of the new listeners anyway about, you know, reiterate who you are, what you do? You know, I know you've done this before, but, you know, just give them a little bit of a background of you. Before we start getting into these.
So I'm Sam Barlow from Barlow Building. Started off as, I suppose, an apprentice doing high-end carpentry work, and now I have a construction company myself, originally focusing more so on client builds, high-end sort of stuff. Turn that down.
That's all right. It'll keep Nick on his toes.
Originally... Oh, I mean, solely focusing on sort of high-end stuff, but really just trying to get into our own development sort of stuff moving forward. So, anything sort of high-end, it's where my passion is. So,
So we won't go down the rabbit hole of, you know, spending half an hour talking about the journey because, that you know, if you guys want to re-listen to the very first one, I would recommend going back. Sam talked a lot about his journey to get to the start of Barlow and what that looked like and all that sort of stuff, the apprenticeship. That was a lot of the stuff that we talked about initially.
Yeah.
So this time around, man, we're going to talk about a little bit, you know, some of the challenges that you're currently having, and we're going to, you know, dive into that. So, you know, as you sort of said, high-end client builds and wanting to step more into development. For me anyway, what I'm finding now is a lot of builders, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of them now are wanting to go more development. So they get rid of the client model, all right, because it's a less headache, you know, and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, is that sort of the part, the, you know, half the reason why you're starting to want to get more into development as well, is drop that client arm?
Yeah, it's kind of been hard though as well, because I feel like the main reason that was sort of the pivotal, that's sort of where we wanted to switch up was probably 12 months ago, was just, you know, 50% of your stress is actually coming from, well, I sort of say 50% of the stress is building the product, 50% of the stress is client communication. So the whole theory behind it was, if we can, you know, we can pretty much do twice as much, twice as many of our developments and have, you know, sort of the same amount of stress as if we've, you know, got half the amount of client work. But I mean, in saying that as well, I very quickly realized you got stresses with, you know, the funding and how that comes about.
Yeah. So this is like, you know, we're not going to go into obviously the finer detail stuff, but this is what I want to talk about, right? Because I feel like for the most part, a lot of guys that are listening anyway, a lot of our listeners, they're all chippies or, you know, they're wanting to get into building or they see this all on socials because it's all a highlight reel, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I got $1 billion worth of like, okay, you know. So, but for guys that aren't in it, they don't really understand that it isn't that easy, you know. A bank isn't going to go, you know, a first tier or a second tier bank isn't just going to give you $500,000 or $1 million, right, to go and do a development. It's not that simple. You know, usually you've got to go 60% LVR or you got to put up a lot of money.
And like, even just having like a bit of a, you know, you can't just be any Joe Blow. Even if you've got, say, I don't know, you know, 70% LVR or whatever it is, but if they don't think that you're a builder that can actually do the work, they're not going to give you the money.
Yeah.
So like you've got to be able to put, you know, together, you know, booklets and everything for them so that they can sort of see.
You're pretty much selling it.
Yeah. Right? Or capability much, statements of what can we do? What are the jobs we've done in the past? You know, feedback from prior clients as well. That whole process this year has been fucking crazy to learn. Yeah. So, yeah.
Do you think that it is becoming more and more difficult to get funding?
For the actual, I understand the residential funding or like home funding really well because I sort of really took quite a dive into it probably 3 years ago where I was really interested as to how could I borrow money with putting in as sort of little as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that over the past sort of 3 to 4 years, I really started to understand how the home lending sort of side of it worked. But now that I've gone into the development funding of it, I feel like I know absolutely nothing. Yeah. So
you're just learning it all again.
Yeah. When I say that, I've spent the last 9 months like near on every single day trying to figure it out. But
yeah.
It's just the different ways that you can structure things and everything. You're never going to know these things.
Yeah. And you don't know what you don't know. Like, you know, there's not a lot of resourcing out there. No one's going to hold your hand. You know, I don't know how many times I've gone to a broker or spoken to someone and, you know, they just breeze past something like, oh, well, you could do this. Like,
yeah.
It's like, well, what is that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, how do we do it? Oh, you got to do it. So, like, you really don't know what you don't know. So, you know, that whole pathway of, you know, the different sorts of funding, you know, believe it or not, guys, you know, anyway, for me, like, you don't have $10 million of cash just sitting there. A lot of these builds that you see or developers that you see that are building these luxury homes or apartment blocks or whatever it is, hey, a lot of that is lended money.
Yeah, it's crazy when you hear about like
and the repaying, they're still they're still repaying that money back. It's not free. It's not free money. Holding cost. It's massive, right? So the risk just changes, you know, and I guess that's what I'm sort of trying to allude to with you is like weighing it up. The client aspect, downfall is the headache of Mr. and Mrs. Jones. The plus side is you're not funding it.
Yeah.
Development side, you don't have that arm of the client, but you've got the stressor of the funding and, you know, yeah, it's...
I feel like though as well, like if you get the model of doing your own development and then clients come past that you feel like you really align with and, you know, your personalities gel together. You're not taking the jobs because you need the jobs. You're taking them because you'll be passionate about the design of them. You feel like you and them can both gel together where at the start of business, you kind of have to just take on work.
That's
With whoever you can to pay the bills and make sure it happens. That's so,
Yeah,
it's going to be nice. The last 12 months of clients we've had have been by far... you know, the best that we've sort of outcome that we've had. And I think that comes as well from just, you know, building systems and you start to know what, you know, from the last however many years of times you fuck things up, you just understand what people want a little bit more and, you know, what they need, what they find important probably because I might find that, you know, I'm giving them a heap of information that I think is important, but then it's information that they actually don't think is important or want sort of something else. Yeah. So.
And I guess you're almost... like you're also on your own sort of journey and you're sort of finessing that and you're getting a little bit more confident, like the more clients, the better builds and stuff like that. Like, you know, anyway, like for me, it was always when I've started down the building part, like now we're obviously, you know, for our business, we're more contracts, like tier 1, tier 2 sort of builders. But, you know, prior it was, you know, I was doing $1.5 million contracts with no... experience. You know, I was sort of just talking it up. And,
yeah.
You know, you almost like you are sort of to a degree faking it to make it.
Yeah.
In a sense, like it's not, you know, and a lot of people are gonna fucking scream at that. But hey, for the most part, like that's the reality of it. Did I deliver a good product? Yes, and the client was happy. But initially, like, I didn't really have the confidence there to.
It probably just wasn't done in the most productive way.
100%. You know what I mean? Misquoting.
Yeah.
You're not like there was no tracking hours. Yeah. You had no, you know, the number one thing that every builder out there says. Carpentry labor will be the number one aspect that you blow out on.
I have blown out on carpentry on jobs so much. We've had the worst job I've blown out on is we allowed, I think, $180,000.
Yeah.
And we obviously like to make, you know, you like to make a little bit of money on the labor as well, and it cost me close to $300,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a guy, I don't know, I'm like a close mate of mine at the moment. He's up in Darwin. He's a builder up there, and he missed 800 man hours of labor.
Fucking crazy.
Yeah. So they ran the job back, and you know they did all their cost analysis and that. And at the end, they were like, "Fuck! Like, where did it all go?" And they're like, 800 man hours, and I was like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah, this shit happens to everyone, and like people, you know, can try to, you know, you see how whatever companies they are, you look at them now and. That's just the whole process of learning it all. Mm. Like the only way you're going to dive in and set really solid systems in your business is from those fuck ups. Mm. Like when you're like, shit, I've just lost 100K, or I've just lost 200K, 50K, 20K, whatever it is. You're like, all right, what's the system I can do and implement now to sort of come back and make sure that doesn't happen again.
All right. So have you ever, because you have now sort of stepped down the development, well, you're wanting to go more development and you're going down that pathway and that journey with even better clients and stuff like that. Have you ever come to a point where you've thought, fuck, like I'm really over-leveraged here? Like, you know, that's what I want to talk about. Because like for me, like it doesn't even have to be like funding aspect. It can just be in general business as a whole. You know what I mean? Low resourcing, not enough staff, too many staff, not enough work. Like, and how have you been able to deal with that?
That resonates so well with us because you plan, you can do as much forecasting as you want, but when you're jumping from, you know, step to step so quickly, which sort of we are with our next developments, you are really, you know, you probably don't have the buffers that you would have in 10 years because you're still young. So it's kind of like you can forecast as well as you want, but then say settlement gets thrown out by a job on a block of land by 2 months or whatever, and then a client bill doesn't hit its target, you know, where you're meant to get, say, $500,000 of
payment,
and it's like, all of a sudden your cash flow is fucked by, you know, close to $1 million or can be more. And it's just trying to trust that the whole, like what's going on and that it's going to sort of end up being well. And I find whenever I have been in like thought patterns of like, fuck, this is getting a bit stressful, you know, with the, like, are we going into too much debt with the whole thing? I try to turn it back to like, all right, well, let's have a think about, what's their sitting in assets from now? You know, what's the amount of equity that we've sort of uplifted from this block by taking it from this to doing this? It's like, all right, well, by us dividing up those blocks, we've made, you know, $1 million or whatever it is. If once we put these products on it, we're uplifting them by another, you know,
so you're trying to take your attention to the upside, rather than the current situation.
Yeah, definitely. And I think over time, the leverage will come as you got more cash. You just won't have to stress yourself out as much as getting in so much debt. But at the moment, to be completely honest with you, it's just if I want to go where I want to get to and I want to go quick, it's just like that's fucking how it is. So you resonate with that?
Yeah.
It's fucking scary sometimes, but...
Hey, like... All right, guys, congratulations. You're halfway through this episode. I hope you guys are really enjoying it. But first, I just want to make a special thank you to Ideal Group Australia. Without them, I wouldn't be able to bring this podcast to you. So special thank you. I hope you guys are enjoying it. Buckle in and get ready to listen to the end of this episode. In all honesty, I don't know when this thing's coming out, but I fully resonate with that, like fully hand on heart. It's like for us... it is leveraged through the roof.
Yeah.
Like you are balls to the wall. There ain't no, you know, plan B. It works or I'm sleeping on a cardboard box. Like that is literally the, you know, and I'm thankful for my wife. You know, she's able, like we've put things, like we've got two kids, so it's a little bit, you know, we've got to protect some things a little bit just so I don't end up underneath a bridge. But yeah, like she's, you know, with me all the way. So it's like, you know, we had a meeting yesterday with our broker and it was like, fuck, like that was one of those moments where I was like, even I, like me being me, I'm very much like, yeah, let's go. Like,
yeah,
I'll risk it all. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, but even then I walked out of that and I was like,
yeah,
fuck, like we're going to be leveraged here. Like it's going to be, we're going to be in those moments. But what, like for me, what I've always leaned on in those times was, okay, as you said, you know, in order to get something that I've never had, I got to do something I've never done.
Yeah.
You know, that means that, you know, no one's going to do it for me. I didn't come from $50 million.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a slush fund of cash.
Yeah.
If they're giving it, I'm taking it.
Yeah.
So it works or it doesn't. And, you know, you sort of, you got to back yourself and you know, there's obviously, you're not just shooting at the hip and hoping for the best. You obviously gauge it. But as you said, you can forecast all you want. You can do every spreadsheet under the sun and fucking Excel tracking and, you know, zero reports, and you can run it all and that's all good. But as you just said, when the fucking money doesn't get paid, it doesn't get paid, dude. When it doesn't settle, it doesn't settle. There's nothing you can do about it. Shit just hits the fan and it's all like, okay, you're going to come crumbling down and just go up in a fucking pile in the corner.
Yeah.
Or are you going to look at, you know, the upside? And, you know, I guess you just sort of manage it. Like you talk to, you voice it. So like, you know, I don't know how many times I've just like been like, hey, like this hasn't gone through, or talking through the situation with a client, or, you know, whoever it is at that time, you're just sort of voicing that with them. And yeah, it's, I guess it's hard to say, eh? Like it's really, it is really hard to put in words.
I think over the last sort of 6 to 9 months, as all of this stuff's been unfolding, one thing that I've personally learned a lot is actually just like reaching out to people where I think I used to, and when I say people, I mean more like developments and people within the industry, is to be very like sheltered with like, I didn't want to, I suppose, annoy anyone or, you know,
Well, you almost don't want to like show your cards either.
Yeah.
Like, but then you soon realize that we're all in the same fucking boat.
I met a guy, you know what I mean? A real estate agent who sold my house, Michael Koloshi. And since I met that bloke, he completely changed my mind on how open people in higher positions are to helping you out in certain areas. Like he's the one that's sort of helping us at the moment, with our next development, and just his willingness to want to help us. When you're like, you're looking at someone that's probably got 100 staff worth, I don't know how much money.
But they got nothing to lose.
Who worth like, out.
Yeah.
And he sits down with Chelsea, my wife, and I near on every week to chat with us about the whole process. It's just been kind of opened my eyes that people, when you think about it, you know, if my apprentice comes to me or anyone, if I have a mate come to me and ask me advice on how to home loans or anything, I'm so happy to be able to help them.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, these people are just, you know, at another level. They're generally really happy to help you as well.
You know, so. I always get into situations because, like, we're looking at, like commercial funding. That's a whole different ball game as well, you know. But that's a journey of its own. But, like, for me, when I'm in those situations where, like, people are talking about a certain thing, all I want to do is get in there and, like, give my, like, you know, talk about it. You know, sometimes I'm almost like trying to hold back a little bit because I don't want to come off like a dick.
Yeah.
You know, but of course, like if anyone, like I've always said, like even my employees, like if they want to go out there and start their own thing and be a competitor to me.
Yeah.
Beautiful, man. Let's go. Like I'm not giving you my contacts, but like I'll give you the all the advice that I never got or anything like that. Like I got nothing to lose, you know. I'm very much a public person. Like I voice everything that's going on. So, you know, I don't know how many times I've said to the guys, like, I'll show you the pay run. I'll show you the profit and loss. Like, I don't care. It's not going to change anything to me. And, and I feel like when you're trying to get advice from someone above you or I've never really liked the whole mentality of guys trying to keep cards to their chest. Like, you know, I'm not going to tell you that.
No one can help like, you though why as are you well. Gonna, yeah. Like no one can help you either if you keep your cards tight to your chest. Yeah. So like that's what I felt. I was like, oh, I don't want to know people to know exactly what situation or whatever you're in, but it's like, how the fuck are people going to help you? And then you talk to people about it and they're like, oh, I've been in that situation. Like,
yeah.
That's just the way it is when you yeah. first start. Like, yeah. Yeah. That's the way it is.
So. Yeah. I don't know how many times I've spoken to guys that are in the same sort of business model as me and I talk to them about the ups and downs and the crunch times and that, and man, they're like laughing in my face. Yeah, they're yeah. like, oh, yeah, dude, like, you know. Yeah. You know, if you can't handle it with like 16 people, how are you going to handle it with 160?
Yeah.
Like, and that's literally their mentality. And it's like they've, you know, obviously gone through the fire and yeah. they can see that, like, you know, they look at me and they're like, oh, that's a breeze. But in the moment, you think the world's crashing down. Like, yeah. I always laugh to Tamara now about back in the, like, back very, very early on. Like, I'm talking like 2015. Around about then anyway, I remember I got our first like tax bill. It was like 10 grand. And I was like, I still remember, I told her to find the message, but yeah. I remember messaging her and I was like, fuck it. I was like, fuck me, man. Like, this is like, I was like, how yeah, is this, yeah. how are we going to pay this? Like, I had no money. I was like fucking stressing out of my mind.
Yeah.
You know, fast forward, you know, you know, is it triple digits or is it, yeah. you know, is it two zeros or one, you know, if it's just one, we're sweet. So, but it's just, yeah, it's the truth. You just go through it. And I feel like, yeah, the guys that are above you there, why wouldn't they just help you out and tell you?
What's, would you get more into commercial or resi sort of stuff?
Torn.
Yeah.
Yeah. So personally for me, I'm taking a little bit of a different approach to our sort of, you know, our sort of pathway. Like, you know, for all the listeners anyway, you guys are about to get a little taste of my personal life, you know, but as I said, as I just preached before, nothing's off limits. So, but for us, man, like we want to, we're heavily invested in property. So like we buy units and houses and stuff like that. And we're leveraged through the roof. You know, you know, look at our bank account. It's fucking dead on debt.
Yeah.
But, you know, we do reports and yields and you know, all that sort of stuff. And we're dealing with property managers. It's fucking, it's a full-time job. Like that's literally what we do. So, you know, did I want to go down the path of development and stuff like that? You know, I feel like now it'd be a lot harder for me to do it only because we're busy enough. Like, you know, you got 16 to 20 blokes on the ground. Like we're running already as it is just with what we've got. So, you know, we're probably planning on selling down in the next, you know, 5, 10, 15 years or something like that, selling down the resi portfolio and putting in buying in commercial.
Yeah.
Because commercial is, you know, 50% LVR. So you're not going to, you know, you need a lot of cash to get in there, but you get the yields, you know?
Yeah.
Where in the resi space, you're up for all the outgoings.
I got a broker that I got introduced to probably about 2 to 3 years ago who completely changed my mind on lending for fucking everything.
Mm.
He was just Stack Capital. They do all Grayers Finance as well. Mark, Anthony, Dale and stuff, the team there are fucking like, rather than you going to them with questions, like, what I found with the bank, you know, you ask them, oh, can I get a home loan? And there's one return answer with, you know, option you can do.
Yeah.
Just the amount of...
Oh, there's so many options, like so different tier lenders.
But no one knows because you just don't get... You never get taught it.
So. No one, and that's the part that, like, you know, we've now set up multiple, you know, trust accounts as well. You know, you buy into the trust, you can hide servicing, you know, as long as the trust is, you know, and how does that work? So that has been like a massive journey on its own.
Yeah.
Just doing that. And it is so true. Like going to a traditional bank like CommBank, they'll help you get your first one.
Yeah.
Maybe. We've lost power.
Yeah. Just one.
Oh no, we're good. We're good. We're good. All right. Yeah. So like you just don't know what you don't know. Yeah. And like for me, I still remember like I think it was like the third or the fourth, something like that. We're like, oh, you know, are you gonna, you know, you're servicing now.
Yeah.
And there's only so much. Yeah, you're a business owner, you can fluctuate your pay, you can do all that. Yeah, but at the end of the day, you don't want to be paying fucking 100 grand in fucking tax. Like you want to fluctuate the best that you can. So that was a whole journey on its own to do that. And, yeah, you just don't know. No one knows. Like, I remember sitting down with Tamara when I learned this whole, like, the LVRs and the equity and drawing this and drawing that and really leveraging revals. Like, we rate reval every 6 months and, like, gauging the market and seeing what's going on.
It doesn't cost you, it would depend.
Well, for us, we don't pay. Yeah. So I'm like, well, fuck, I'm going to do it anyway. Like, yeah. When I can draw out whatever to go again, I'm drawing. So
and even if you get a valuation back, you don't have to accept that either. Like, if you don't think that that's fair market value, you give them, like, hey, this property, and give them your, like, analysis as to why their valuation shit, and then 9 times out of 10 they'll at least go up a little bit.
So how's this, right? You know, I learned this whole thing about this valuation thing. There was all these articles about in the commercial space about guys fluctuating it to suit them. So there's a way around in the commercial space where you can get a reval on a property. So I'll put it in easy terms: you buy a property $1 million, you can get it revalued. You know, the valuation might come in at 1.2. You can kick back and say, oh, nah, we believe that it's X, Y, and Z. And, you know, you can do that in the commercial space. And they reckon that 9 times out of 10, they'll go back and be like, oh, okay.
Yeah, crazy.
And they'll just put it up.
Yeah.
And for the listeners, to put it in context, these valuations, the reason why we're talking about, why we're actually talking about these is because then the banks look at that. Yeah. And when we say LVR, it's just loan to value ratio. So if you buy a property at $1 million, loan to value ratio in the resi space is 80, 90, whatever it is. You know, you got to come up with the extra bit of your own cash. But so, you know, obviously if the property value goes up, that frees you up to draw all that money out. So, but that's what we're going down. We're going completely off topic here. This is not part of it. Yeah, we could talk about this for fucking hours on hours and hours, but it is so interesting, right?
Yeah, it definitely
like it
is
so interesting. And that's, you know, I can honestly see myself drawing to it and becoming a little bit more passionate about it, because I remember literally sitting down with Tamara, laying it all out to her, and then she was standing in the kitchen. She turned to me, she goes, well, if it's that easy, why isn't everyone doing it? I said, because no one fucking knows.
Yeah.
No one's asking.
And it takes a while for you to understand and wrap your head around all the numbers of everything, and then how to do feasibilities based on.
Yeah.
Ours are a bit different. Like, our feasibilities are more on, like, new developments.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the FISOs moment, and stuff like that. Like, that's a whole nother fucking, you know, banks using that to.
And even when you start to structure, like, not just private, like, big bank debts, and then go into your second tiers, and then even lower funding than that. Yeah. It's like the structures, how they change and stuff. It's almost like above my pay grade. I call Mark and I'm like, does this work? And he'll be like, yes or no.
Listen, if you got to get some loan docs and go get a solicitor to sign off it and it's a shark deal, just be very careful what you're signing.
Oh, you can very quickly, your profit margins get eaten up super quickly.
Yeah, you're doing the job for nothing. Yeah. You know, you're doing it for? You're doing it for the photo at the end.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing. That photo. That photo is your moneymaker. That's it.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, moving on. I know we got a little bit off topic there, but that's the beauty of running the second one. So if a lot of you guys aren't getting a lot of context on who Sam is, you can listen to the first one. All right, here we go. So talk to me. Over the last 12 months, has there been any drastic changes to Barlow at any? Has the team increased? Has it decreased? How's your management? How's the on-site team? How have you been able to deal with all that? Have you bought back more time? Have you moved guys into the office a little bit? Have your structures changed?
We're just in the process of hiring 2 office staff at the moment. Yeah. So we're going to project manager full time. And then there's also...
And how did that all come up? Because that wasn't something that we talked about last time. Was that, you know, is this something that you've been wanting for ages? Did you find a hole in your...
We got a development coming up that's meant to be settling in where we pretty much turn dirt straight away in the middle of March.
Yeah.
Which is 4 luxury homes.
Yeah.
The smallest home's 550 square meters. The biggest one will be about 750 square meters.
Yeah.
On a block in Broadbeach Waters.
Yeah. So you're leveraged.
just doing 4 luxury homes all at once. We just didn't have the team to do it in the office.
Doesn't matter how good you are. Yeah. You just.
Yeah. I just sort of sat down and figured out. I did it late last year. Just all right. You know, I pretty much just worked it out on what staff members have we needed for 2 luxury homes on the go at once at the moment, where next year we're going to have between 5 or 6 on the go at the same time, maybe even 7 if we get another job that we've been looking at as well. So
Yeah.
Just trying to trying to understand and talk to people within the industry. You know, how would my team look? How would I structure that? Because I think the hardest thing that I found at the start was I haven't come from a construction company that has office team members. So for someone that's in a large construction organization, they can go, you need, you know, a project manager, a financial advisor, or whatever it is. You know, you need a, you know, whatever the role is.
Yeah.
I just had no fucking idea because I'm like, I need this, this, and this. And someone's like, oh, this person does that. This person does this.
And then how do you hold them accountable?
And this took me probably 6 months to be able to wrap around in my head and actually figure out what this office team would look like, because I just couldn't grasp in my head. Like, I was like, I don't even know where the fuck to start.
Yeah.
So it's been like over the past 6 months trying to think of all these tasks.
Create the role. And that's a lot of things as well. It's like a lot of people just think that when you go, you know, I would classify us as that, you know, we're sort of, you know, we're not a franchise or anything like that. There's no rule book. Yeah. When you go and work for these, like the business owner or the person in the number one person, like they got to create this role out of fucking thin air usually. Like it's just like they literally get a bit of paper, they write the heading of the job role and they go, okay, what do they want this person to do? Like that is what it literally consists of. It's not just like, oh, okay, I need a fucking project manager. It's like, okay, well, what is he going to do for me?
I think you overcomplicated in yourself of like, what's a project manager do? What's everyone else's project manager do? Where it's like,
what do they need? What do you need?
What the fuck do you need? Like, what does everyone else need? Where like you really overcomplicate it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. All right. Sweet. So you're going down that path. So you found someone now? You got someone in?
We've started interviewing people. Yeah. The moment that block settles, we'll pretty much go straight balls deep. And then our carpentry team will go from.
So that was my next thing that I was going to step into.
Yeah.
All right. Because you're stepping into now seven, as you said, you've got now seven. Well, let's just say you've got seven. Okay. Let's play a little game. How have you ever run that model of subbing out the carpentry works? And is that something that you've ever thought about doing?
Actually, I thought of a question to ask you when I was driving up as well. And because yes, we do. Because our carpentry team's going to need to go to at least 20 next year.
Yeah. So that was something that, because, you know, I'm going to talk about this because there's a lot of builders in that part where they're at that crossroad now.
Yeah.
I'm
going to try to hire full-time as many decent carpenters as I can, but I also understand that there's only so many before the only decent carpenters I'm going to get are people that are out by themselves. The benefit I think of having a carpentry crew in is just that, you know, they run their apprentices and stuff, and I don't have to have someone underneath to, you know, I can just have a site supervisor talking directly to the,
because correct me if I'm wrong, trying to find good apprentices or good qualifieds or tradies, that's a fucking job on its own.
What do you think the benefit of hiring contractor carpenters are over employing your own carpenters?
So we do a lot of stuff for a lot of boutique builders, like contract stuff. And for us, my common thing that I find why these guys and why it's becoming very common for them to go down that path is there's a few reasons. Number one, it's obviously, you know, the number one thing is, there's only so many hours in the day. They, you know, if you've got a team of eight, to go from a team of eight to a team of 16, like for us to go from a team of 17 to a team of 30, that doesn't just happen like that. No. Takes a lot of time, you know,
filling out process.
Yeah, filling out the processes, building the team. So for a builder that's got so many moving parts, they're not like for us, we're just dealing with chippies and presses. But for a builder, they've got so many moving parts. You got finances, developers, clients, all this sort of stuff. A lot of the time, they just don't have the time and the energy to do it.
Build that culture,
build that team. People can do it, but I'm finding now that it's becoming more mainstream for them to a lot of smaller builders, when they're only doing one or two builds a year, fair enough. But, you know, they always get to that point in time where they're like, oh, they want more.
Yeah.
You know? There's a long time between drinks. They don't want to be waiting fucking 6 months for a frame payment. You know, they want to be getting a frame payment every 2 months.
Yeah.
So that's the number one benefit. Number two is obviously quality and all that sort of stuff. Because if you get the, and don't get me wrong, I know before a lot of builders jump, there's fucking the shittest chippies that I've ever seen out there, blah, 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 blah. you get the right contractor with the right brand on the right job for the right rate, and you're not trying to chop rates, and you feel that they're confident, you built that relationship with them, it'll change the game.
Yeah.
Because not only are they doing it for the best interests of themselves, because they're trying to rep, like for us, we're trying to do the best product because we're representing ourselves. Number two, they're trying to move efficiently so they can get in and out of that job. So for a builder, they get, rather than their chippies fucking just rocking up, oh yeah, I'm just going to work from 6:30 to 2:30, 5 days a week. Yeah, it's cruisy as. They take fucking, you know, like they take as long as they fucking want.
Yeah.
Right? There's no drive.
Yeah.
Where now you put the schedule in, we say, listen, we've got 21 days or 4 weeks to do this whole fucking house, we're hitting it.
Yeah, yeah.
So then from a builder, they can forecast it a lot better, and then there's no overrun, there's no less time. Yeah, there's a little fluff. They got three guys that are just, you know, a lot of the time for a lot of these custom homes, before anyone says, oh, there's so many things. And that's why I can't preach it enough. In order to run that model, you have to be set up to run it. So the builder has to have their processes in place. You have to have the right contractor in place, and it can run like magic. Like the amount of guys that we do stuff for now, it just runs.
Yeah.
They send us through, like you're talking $4-5 million homes.
Yeah.
They send us through the stuff. They say, this is the scope that we want you to cover. We're going to have a project manager, a foreman there to run it. We're going to have two guys underneath him, and they're going to do all the fluff.
Yeah.
So they're going to do all the curvatures, the skylights, the all that sort of stuff. But they want us to do the bulk.
Yeah.
Done. You know, we'll come in, 12 blokes, boom.
Do a majority of it. And then
little Mexicans, boom. We'll come straight, you know what I mean? We'll come in, we'll bulk it out. We'll do the job.
Yeah.
It'll be mad. All
out of the same car.
Yeah. We'll get all out of the same, like we'll do the job, done.
Yeah.
They get their payment. They don't have to worry about guys taking the piss. They don't need to worry about nothing. Is it cost so much? Yes.
Yeah.
At the start, when you're looking at for dollar value, when you're running your FISOs and you're getting your prices and stuff, you would see it and you would go, fuck, that's so much money.
Yeah.
But as we just mentioned at the start, tell me how many jobs at the end of it, when the job's done and you run your labor out and you run your carpentry out, how much you've gone over.
And even just holding costs, right? Like holding costs when you're holding
through the roof.
5 million, 10 million, 15, whatever it is, it's a fucking lot of money.
Yeah. So that's why you got to just weigh it up.
I like your point there where you say get carpentry crews in to do the bulk of it. And then when you come into your, you know, that really tricky little detail or whatever, get your fucking guys that will, you know, your main guys that may take a little bit longer, but they're going to do that.
They're going to do that because you don't want to be paying your guys, you know, and that's what I mean. But you have to be set up to do it.
Yeah.
That's why like a lot of the guys that we do stuff for now, it's a definitive scope. So they'll highlight plans and they'll say, listen, this is what we want. This is what we're excluding. This is what we want you to include, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Can you do it? Yep. And then that's just how it's all packaged up. So when we rock up to site, there's no gray area.
Will they give you like, obviously you don't want to be micromanaged and everyone builds stuff differently, but how I've thought that it could work well with these developments moving forward is just having like a Barlow carpentry booklet of just a few things that I like done. So, you know, it could be, hey, I want my windows done in this sort of way, or I want to make sure that on the end of walls I have a double stud that's like...
Yeah, so every build is different.
Yep.
The way that you like things is not the way that, you know, I'm not going to list guys, but a lot of like some other builders that we do stuff for, it's not the same way that they like it done.
Yeah.
So if the more boutique that you are and the more straighty 180 that you are, that you want things done, and this is what I say about being set up, and I've helped builders do this over time, you know, now that we've built relationships, they've got these things in place. So whether or not they use us or they use someone else, it's just that. It's like a specific document. So each aspect of the work, you name it, trusses, pre-sheet, it's all there, windows.
Yeah, I love that.
Some guys, they don't care. As long as the window's in the Australian standard, done. But yet, you know, some guys are like, no, we want things this way. Okay, done.
Yeah.
But what I found at the start, and this is where it can cause a little bit of an issue, is if you're saying it after the fact, this is where guys will run into it, right? You have to verbalize it right from the get-go, and you got to have it in writing. You got to really make it known to the guys that you're getting and be straight with them. Be like, listen, I'm not chopping for price.
Yeah.
Right? Obviously, I'm not wanting to pay six times as much, but I'm not going to be getting you to do it at Metricon rates.
Yeah.
Right? So give me a fucking price. This is what I'm expecting. These are the particular things that I'm looking for. Anything outside of that, do it as per the QBCC standard.
Yeah.
You know, as long as it's within that, happy days. But yeah. These are the particular things that I'm looking for, right? Thresholds and all that sort of particular sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then if they give you the price and you trust them and they do the good job. But I've heard horror stories as well, you know, and every builder and developer out there have got every horror story of chopping carpentry guys down. But hey, I'm not going to go down the path of why I think, you know, why I think that's, it's a fucked industry, because like it for the most part, a lot of guys, they, you know, builders and developers, they say, oh, these are the, because they've done their FISOs, they've priced the job 18 months ago. And I know, I've spoken to a lot of developers, I know how the game gets played. They priced the job 18 months ago, inflation, CPI, we don't have it in, we can't allow for it, blah, blah, blah. But yet you rock up in a $300,000 ute. Like, anyway, all I can say is just, if you're going down that path of, you know, you're setting rates and stuff like that, then if you're setting rates and you're saying, listen, can you do it for this, and you're getting a carpentry crew, and we don't do rates anymore, like that's us, we don't work on rates at all.
Oh, hourly?
No. Like, so we quote.
You quote everything. Yeah,
so
yeah,
we
yeah.
quote everything, right? Or if it is a rate, it's a rate that we've made.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So we don't ever work off like giving rates. But if you are running that model where you're giving the rate and you want to be particular about certain things, you need to voice that before the fact.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you're voicing it during it, or you haven't got a process in place after it, that's where you're going to run into issues. And that carpentry price that originally was 100 is now going to cost you 200, because you're going to be redoing it and the guys are going to walk.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're like, well, fuck. Like,
you should have told me.
You should have told me, yeah. You know what I mean? But then it's cash 22. The guys also accepted the purchase order. Yeah. They also accepted the rate. So I get it from both sides of the fence. And who's at fault? Both.
Mm.
That's what I stand. You know, I've learnt the fucking hard way not to do that anymore. So like, I'm more not educating, but I definitely am trying to like help a little bit. And I'm, you know, I won't accept it. If someone gives me something, I'm like, okay, well, what is it? What are the key things? You tell me now, or we're just doing it as per QBCC. Like, you know, I can't expect the boys just to assume that you want things done a certain way.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, they're not mind readers, you know. But for a lot of our stuff, like for the majority, I would say 60% of it now, we've got flow of work. So for us, like we sort of say now, like, listen, this is how we do things here. This is when we run reports, QAs. This is how we structure it all. If there's anything that you want adjusted before we go to contract, you need to tell us. Otherwise, this is how it'll run, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm going down a rabbit hole here, but you know, because carpentry is such a big thing, especially in the resi space, it's probably the biggest thing, right? There's so many moving parts, unlike electrical and aircon and all that sort of stuff. You're smacking in a fucking ducted system. It doesn't matter what house you're going in. It's the same shit.
Yeah.
Right? With carpentry, it's not. Every house is different.
Every house is different.
So that's why, like, I say, like, listen, this is when I want an engineering report. This is when you should bring in the QA, because we were getting issues where people were bringing in a QA daily or fucking week. And it was like, you're just wasting your time.
Yeah.
Like, we're not even done. So do it then. And then it was like, it was a bit against the grain, and they would lean and be like, okay, we'll listen to him, we'll do it. And they did. And I was like, okay, like now we're all happy. Like, you're getting what you want, we're getting what we want. Happy days. Yeah.
Clear communication.
Yeah. So that's why, in all honesty, that's why I was going to ask you is like, you know, how are you going to go about managing that and the whole, you know, bringing on contractors and do you want to build the team, you know, because how many chippies have you got now?
There is 7 carpenters at the moment. Yeah. So which is the smallest our team's been. For the last year, it's the smallest it's been in the past 5 years.
Yeah.
But it's just been really, we've been turning away a lot of work for the past 6 months because I've known what's sort of coming.
So
it was originally meant to kick off in December and
it
still hasn't kicked off yet. Mm. So it's been a lot of thinking and just... Yeah, actually.
Is the resourcing aspect stressing you out a little bit about how you're physically going to be able to get these done?
No, that doesn't really stress me out too much. And even I get stressed at the end of jobs because I'm just, I defect every single job myself. I spend like a month normally full time there. Only thing that gets me a little bit stress is just thinking about the end of the jobs and me having 4 luxury homes to defect at exactly the same time.
Yeah.
But I also knowing that I had these coming in the last two jobs that we finished last year, I brought on like some of our long-term employees and sort of made them defect before me. And it was that perfect like example of me not giving them the the ability to be able to do a job that they're more than capable of doing, because I would come behind them and defect, you know, fuck all. I had barely anything to defect after them, but it was just me not giving up that like responsibility, I suppose.
Yeah, and so, it's almost like not an ego, but like you almost like you're trying to relinquish, like you want to keep that. You're like, oh, no, it's only me.
They can do this well.
Exactly. It's, like for us, we brought in internal defect reports for each stage.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll notify the guys, like if they're on a house and we say, okay, well, we're claiming, it'll be at the same time. So if we're claiming frame, that leading hand of that job, he'll do his IDR.
Yeah.
He'll then produce that. He'll then give that to us in the office.
Yeah.
And then we'll also either send a different leading hand off another job to go and do that his.
All right.
To redo another one on that one and then mimic both of them and be like, okay, are they showing the same?
Yeah.
Or is he saying, oh, nah, it's fucking shit or whatever? And then once we get those two, we'll either make the decision on whether or not myself or Kelly or someone else goes in and double checks it. And, you know, that's been a fucking game changer as well, because it's not, you know, and this is all management, soft skills and stuff. Like it was never a case of when I brought that in to be like, oh, he's coming for your job. It was never that. It was always like, you know, saying to him, like, we're just trying to raise our standard.
Yeah.
And it was just a way of me being like, okay, you know, I'm getting you to do an IDR, but don't just take the piss on it,
because
fucking Johnny's going to come over from that site and he's going to check it as well.
Yeah, all right?
So, and he's just coming with a new set of eyes. And man, I tell you what, it's been a fucking game changer.
Yeah, really.
You know what I mean? And by the time the builder or the developer goes through and does a QA, they're almost looking for shit. Like they're just literally just like trying to find something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
There's few trades like that, whether it's certifiers or obviously builders as well. It's almost your job to find stuff. So when there's not much to find, it's kind of like you find trying to find.
Well, that's it. Anything. Like, and man, I've met all the QAs and that around Brizzy, where it's just like, and they spray it up, and I'm like, hey, we'll do it. But like, if this is what it is, then all is good. Oh, there's about 20 things. I'm like, all right, 20 is nothing. All right, so I think, what do we got? That's been good. This conversation has actually been good. So I hope you guys are getting something out of it. We've been just talking and shooting the shit, so it's been really good. All right, so final lot of questions. Now, we talked about obviously your upcoming projects and what that looks like and the developments and stuff like that, but I can't remember. So you ended up selling last time when we sat down, Zama.
Yeah.
You living in that one, or did you sell that one?
I think last time we spoke, I was planning on living.
Okay, yeah. So that was the question on the last one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did that one go? Because I think you were just at the end of it, right?
Yeah. It defected, like, I think through that stage, we're still defecting at the time and sold. At that point, we weren't going to sell it.
Mm.
And then we found another block around the corner, which is our next one, which is...
So you did sell Zama?
Yeah, we ended up selling it. Yeah. So
good outcome, happy days. As good as what you thought or not quite?
It wasn't designed to sell. So
okay.
I honestly feel like there would have been probably around $500,000 worth of stuff in the house that if I was doing a development, no one would know the difference. But because I thought it was my house, I put it in there.
Yeah.
So like there's just details in the house that no one... Unless they're a builder
would appreciate that.
They just don't appreciate it.
That costs a lot just to do that.
But
as a client, they're like...
So, but I mean, it also made me, you know, you take your learnings from that and realize that, you know, where areas we can save money in the future. But it's not about, I mean, obviously always just cutting corners to save money. It's just about spending money where...
That's it.
People are actually care about it. Yeah. So, we've been really, really thoughtful about that with our next designs.
Yeah.
So
with these next four, we're going to wrap this up in a minute. The next four, right? Because that's going to be a massive... I want to run this when the next four are done and that's all done. We're going to sit that down and I'm gonna talk about that, because, man, that's...
Yeah.
You've got a massive journey ahead of you, and that's gonna be fantastic. But with these next four, were you part of the full design phase, everything?
Chelsea and I did everything. So we obviously work alongside a... designer,
yeah,
or drafty to draw up the plans originally. Then we start taking them to people to do up renders, and then it's just the process of going through everything. Yeah. So the last 9 months has been pretty much full time on that site. So
yeah,
we've only been having like we had
nothing. It's not sold. Nothing sold yet off plan.
It's all unconditional and everything's been paid, and we're just waiting for a few things to seal with council. So it should be sorted in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, sweet. And then you just got to deliver it. Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. And then just got to deliver it. So.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. It's all fun and games.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, man. Well, hey, that's pretty well it. You know?
Perfect.
I know we just basically, it wasn't as structured as the last one, but that's the beauty of running this back. So, but as I said, guys, if you want to get a little bit more of actually Sam's story and how Barlow came about and, you know, him and Chelsea and all that sort of stuff, listen to the first one.
Have to get Chelsea on next time.
Yeah. We can have it. We can have a few people in here and, it'd be good. Like, it'd be good to hear her story as well, you know, because I'll tell you what, man, like, same as Tamara, they don't get the, you know, they don't get the shine that they deserve, and they got to deal with us.
Yeah.
Fucking stressing out of our minds.
She's really the engine behind the whole of the everything to do with Barlow.
Yeah.
So
you know, it'd be good to get her on, and but yeah, definitely, I reckon that'd be perfect.
Yeah.
After the next four as well, because we'll be able to talk about that journey and you guys. So, but again, man, thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
I hope you guys got some little. I know we went off topic about finances and fucking all that sort of stuff, but
listening to us like
these guys don't know what they're talking about. But that's the thing, we're trying to bring some insight into the listeners, you know what I mean? If we're literally even just talking about it, it sparks a decision.
Definitely.
Maybe some guy might listen to it and they may be like, oh, like, so yeah, definitely, that's what we're trying to do here. So thanks again, man, I appreciate it, and we will catch you guys on the next one. Hey guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode. If something hit home for you, it would mean the absolute world to us if you could like and share this podcast with someone else that would benefit from it. Tune into next week's episode, as this will be one that you don't want to miss.